Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to this episode number 86 of the Free Cities Podcast. I hope you are well this week. I trust you're working hard and meaningfully towards your goals. In my experience, if there's any consolation, over a certain time scale, most things are possible. So keep showing up and putting in the work, and the rest will, as they say, become history. Today's show is an important one, I believe, if certainly like me, you value individual freedom and prosperity. Efrat Fenningsen is a journalist and marketing expert who I sat down with in Prague a few weeks ago, and we talked everything CBDCs. For those of you new to the concept, that's central bank digital currencies. CBDCs, as the name suggests, are programmable digital tokens issued directly from a country's central bank. Now, you may not think that's a problem. I do, but don't trust me. Here's what Augustin Karsten, the general manager of the Bank of International Settlements, had to say about it a couple of years ago when he was asked about the disappearance of cash. He said, in cash, quotes, "We don't know who is using a $100 bill today." And he went on to say, a key difference with the CBDC is that, and I would love to do his accent here, but I can't, is that the central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. Yep, that's right. It's programmable money issued solely by the creepy psychopathic banking overlord types. That's my characterization, of course, but I've linked that particular speech in the show notes, so you can do your own research and take a look to see if you would trust this guy to issue you with your money. Anyway, since 2008, fortunately for us, we have an antidote to this sociopathy. That would be Bitcoin, of course, so don't despair. But it is nevertheless important for you to prepare yourself for what is almost certainly coming along with CBDCs. Topics discussed in this podcast include marketing CBDCs to the public, the COVID crisis, social credit scores, Alipay, WeChat, and what's going on in China right now, plus the arrival of personal carbon allowances and the possibility of an actual global financial collapse in our lifetimes. Anyway, many thanks to Efrat for sharing her knowledge, and check out her own podcast, You're the Voice. Loads of great guests on there. Links in the show notes, of course, along with all our other links. Also, if you haven't already checked out our new documentary, Zones of Progress, then jump on over to our YouTube channel to watch it now for free. Did you know you can also listen to these podcasts over there as well? I know not many of you do. And yes, of course, it's because there's no video on them. But it's something we can almost certainly expect in the future of this podcast once I can free up a little more time to focus on it. In the meantime, you'll just have to bear with me. And you know what else you could do in the meantime? Of course, you could just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Efrat Fenningsen. So, yeah, I watched an interview you did just now during COVID, thought it was really interesting.
Which one?
It was with a lady, and it was online, and you were talking about, it was either during COVID or yep. After it, you were basically analysing what happened during COVID through the eyes of a marketer, and who was doing what and why and stuff. And I thought it was pretty fascinating because I've never thought of it like that. And it was, I quite like to sort of start talking about it again and see where it goes, because you are somewhat of an expert in marketing, so you can spot all these things. Mm-hmm. What I thought might be interesting is if we put it in the context of, I don't know whether it'll work, but CBDCs, mm-hmm. because this is obviously, we all think at least, it's a direct threat to individual freedom. There's no question about it. Okay. But I don't know much about it in the news. Okay. Like you hear that, oh, the EU is trying this, or the European Central Bank's doing this, or that. But no one's talking about it in terms of the freedom implications in the news. The news is even relevant anymore, that news. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But so what's your take then on, why don't we start with, how do you see it being reported in the news, if at all? The idea of CBDCs.
Right. So first of all, you get a lot of signals from the market, not necessarily from the news. As a marketeer, what I am trained in doing is picking up the signals and identifying where someone is following a specific trajectory in order to call me into action. You know, marketeers have this really important bottom line, which is call to action. What do you want to try and make the other person do? Okay, that's what marketeers in the end of the day do, right? They try to influence a behavior. They try to influence a perception in order to get the audience to do the thing that they want them to do, whether it's to buy something, convert from this state to that state, subscribe to something, believe in something, right? There could be many outcomes. And so when you start a campaign, when you have a marketing campaign running, then there are various stages of the campaign. You can be right in the beginning of it, or in the middle of it, or towards the end of it. And the style and the messaging and the emphasis changes from stage to stage. And as marketeers, well, at least for me as a marketeer, I'm trained to spot those signals. I mean, I do reverse engineering, right? I look at the signals and I go, okay, which stage are they in? Are they in at the moment? And what are they trying to make me do and why? And so that's what had me wake up to COVID, which is what you mentioned before, because I spotted the signals of all the international media all around the world, all different countries in lockstep, conveying the same messages. And so that was like the first thing. How come they're all talking about the same thing at the same time with the same end result that they want us to do, which is to stay at home and be afraid and activate our fear emotion and our stress and da da da. So now if I look at CBDC, right, as the next threat, and it's important to, I think, mention that CBDC is, I believe, an inevitability. It will happen. However, the extent to which it will happen is still not clear. Like, it's not clear whether they would launch it fully and say, okay, we're replacing one system with another, and from now on, you only have CBDC, or they'll try to complement the existing system for a transition period, and then you'll have both fiat and the existing way of living plus CBDC, so that you can get used to it. That's probably most probable that will happen. Or that they would say, that'd be a big resistance from the public, from you know, people would understand and they'll resist it, and they'll understand that it would be a very tough mission to roll it out to the public. So they'll go, you know, how they take a few steps back and they go, oh yeah, we thought we would, but we always told you that it's not sure and that we're testing things and it's an experiment at the moment. And we decided that either we're not going to roll it out at all, which is, I think, not very probable, but it's possible, or we're going to continue trialing out for a few more years, and during that time, you'll get used to it, or we'll normalize it into your life in some way. And we'll add on something else that would make your life better, but it will also advance our agendas. For example, a state stable coin, right? let's have a stable coin, an official stable coin of the central bank for each country. And then people will go, oh, okay, it's not CBDC, it's something else, it's a stable coin. What is that? And then they have a new chance of conveying that into your life. You know what I mean? So how it will be entering our lives is still unknown. I believe that it's inevitable that in some shape or form it will be part of our lives in the next few years. I actually am with the group that thinks that it will happen sooner than later. I reckon it's going to start in the next 2 years, like to be completely rolled out. And so now back to your question, where are the signals in the media and how do we know that this is going to happen and what are they conveying in the media? So they did start in some places around the world, their marketing campaigns, but they're not bringing it out to the mainstream media yet. There are some really small mentions here and there that if you really, like me, actively are seeking for it, you will find it. But if you're the normal person in the street, you will not know anything about it because the mainstream media will not push anything about it. However, the central banks themselves have been launching different marketing campaigns to different audiences. So in the EU, the ECB has launched a B2C marketing campaign. They started going all out, like with advertising, tweeting, you know, they put some information in the papers, and they're trying to encourage people to accept the digital euro. That's how they call it. So Christine Lagarde is, you know, modeling for her campaign, and it's really funny to see. And obviously all of the campaigns that have launched already are super positive. It's fast, it's reliable, you can trust us, it's immediate, it's cheap, it may be free, you know what I mean? So CBDC is great, that's the narrative. Like there's no zero risks. They say nothing about the risks. Now, a similar thing has happened in Israel. I watch closely in Israel, that's where I live, so I watch the central bank in Israel, and they have also started a campaign. However, their audience is not the mainstream, is not the whole population. They go to tech solution developers, tech companies, financial institutions that can be their executors of their architecture. And so you have a specific group in the population that is being targeted by the central bank. They want them to know. So they're now starting to produce videos. They do events. They issue press releases. You do see it in the financial media from time to time, some mentions for it. And what the state or the central bank is trying to do is to position, once again, as you do, Israel as a leader, pioneer, innovator in the world. So we're going to be first, we're doing it right, this is, everyone should watch us because our technology and solutions are the best. And that's very typical for Israel. Like you see that Benjamin Netanyahu is doing that all the time with everything, with COVID, with whatever. You know, we're pioneers, we're first. We may be a very small country, but we're very important, you know, so... So that's like the same narrative. Now, how do you know that they are aware or even afraid of the public reaction and that they know that what they're doing is not moral, not ethical, and very dangerous is when you follow closely their publications, whether it would be white papers or press releases, and I follow in Israel, all of them, and in some other central banks, some of them, because I don't have time to read everything. But for example, lately, the German central bank has released a white paper, and they admitted, they wrote in the white paper, it's in their own words, that they know that the decision, the trade-off between privacy considerations and the features of central bank digital currencies is a sensitive trade-off, and they need to be careful in order not to upset the public and lose trust. They say it in their own words. I paraphrased, right? But I've got the actual quote of it. So they're aware that they don't want to lose the trust of the public. They know that the actual technological features that they're dealing with are highly controversial because that much power in the hands of the state and the central bank is explosive. They're aware of that. That's one signal. You can see similar things in Israel. The central bank governor in Israel, there was an event about a week ago, and he said, the digital shekel, that's the name of the CBDC in Israel, the digital shekel is not going to be issued by an unknown Satoshi Nakamoto.
Is that what he said?
He did say that. He said, this is not like this common digital currency that people know called Bitcoin. This is different. This is issued and managed by the institution that you know and trust called Central Bank of Israel. So he had to revert to FUD and shaming of Bitcoin in order to amplify the trustworthiness of CBDC. So they're aware of our power, our ability to resist, and what we would do. They're also, Christine Lagarde and many other central bankers, they're also very, very, the governor of the Central Bank of Israel, him and Christine Lagarde were conveying the exact same message about 6 months ago. They're very much aware of the danger of privacy. And so they made a point to put in their messaging document the same message. The CBDC that we will launch will be private. They said that will be private, but will not be anonymous. And then you can start, you know, we can break it down and say, how can it be completely private without anonymity, without any ability to be not even pseudo anonymous? But they make a point to tell you, don't worry, you'll have your privacy, because they know it's a concern for us. Plus, they say, you will also get to keep and continue using your cash, because they know that people are very outraged about the abolition of cash or going cashless, or, you know, cash enables privacy, of course. And so they say, up until certain sums, you'll be able to continue using cash. But really, the way you need to look at CBDC is like digital cash. You have your cash and you have your digital cash, right? That's the correlation that they're trying to create, which is completely false, of course. There's nothing that is digital cash about CBDC. It is fiat. It's fiat on steroids, but it's definitely not. It has no properties of cash apart from being the same name of the fiat currency. So yeah, so there are many signals you can identify and tune into when you really follow their work. You have to kind of interpret, if they're saying something, why are they saying it? What is the concern that they're trying to dismiss? In marketing terms, we call it pain points. People don't like the term pain points, but this is how marketing works. It's trying to identify what is the pain of the audience or the customer. What would they be concerned about? What would they not like or would like to resolve? And you try to resolve it for them in advance before they even say it, because you know that that's what is worrying them. And so that's what they're doing.
When you were saying pain points, thinking in advance, trying to make sure that the public are on board with all this stuff, I wonder whether it was always like that. And I wonder whether it even occurred to them that the public might not like CBDCs. Because I remember, you must have seen this, a few years ago, what's the big fat guy? Carsten someone, what's his name?
Augustin Christans.
He's
the head of the Bank of International Settlements.
Right, that guy,
BIS.
Right. There was a video that got out of him talking about CBDCs where he, in no very simple terms, said complete control over whatever.
That's right.
So
he said, with cash we have no control. With CBDC we are going to have control, and we're going to enforce it. We're going to have the means to enforce it.
Yeah, but it was explicit. It was absolutely explicit. Is that because he was talking to banks and he didn't think it was going to get out? Or did they even not really understand that what they're doing is terrible?
I think it's two things. I think, first of all, he fucked up. He was not supposed to say what he said. And secondly, you got to understand, these people really do see most of us as useless eaters. They really are dismiss our intelligence and
condescending
completely. They think they're superior. They think that they know best. They're the smartest. They decide for us. They know what's best for humanity. They really do, on the most part, most of them really do think that they're not hurting anyone. They think they're doing the right thing, the good thing for humanity. And they've been authorized to do so. We've given them our powers. And so they see public officials as something completely different than what we see it, right? We selected you guys to make changes for us rather than decide for us what's right or what's wrong. And so this guy is speaking his mind without really being political, without really thinking that people like us would listen to him and digest it and then make it go viral and warn humanity. And what you saw that was happening after he did that is both is all prominent central bankers around the world try to soften his stand. They since then, no one has said what he said. They're trying to be a lot more politically correct about it, a lot softer. They're doing, like, I wouldn't say in 180, but a back, how do you say?
Backtrack
to their positive stand, instead of like going all in and say, we will control you and this can be enforced. They're trying to change his narrative. So I think he fucked up. I think he underestimated the public's awareness. Especially, I think he did that in 2020. And they did not know how much COVID is going to wake people up at that time. He did it really early on. By the way, that instance and a few other related central bankers that were talking about the intersection between money, financials, and COVID at the time in 2020 was what woke up Ed Dowd at the time. I don't know if you know Ed Dowd. Edward Dowd, he used to be an analyst in BlackRock, the biggest holding company in the world. And he would run billions of dollars for BlackRock. He's a finance guy. He would analyze trends in the financial markets and predict where the market's going in order to make money for BlackRock and its customers. And so when COVID started and he saw the bankers, which is his expertise, talking about health all of a sudden, what they said at the time was like, we're going to use the vaccines in order to create digital passes, or green passes it was called in Israel, in order to control the way people use their finances. They joined both things very early on. And he was like, huh? What? Why are you mixing health and finance? And it was his trigger to wake up and go, something is very fishy here. They're trying to use the COVID crisis that they created in order to justify more printing of money, postponing a financial collapse that is inevitable. So he started putting a lot of things together. That woke him up. And since then, he's been a whistleblower. And he's doing amazing work in revealing statistics about vaccine injuries. He's taken all of his skills from finance and put them into health and COVID, which is unbelievable. So that woke a lot of people up and they were not counting on it. So that guy full of hubris and probably ate three other central bankers for breakfast, how fat he is, he did not count on people to probably notice what he was saying.
Well, how much do you know about what's going on in China? Because China, from what I can, it's very hard to know.
Yep.
I speak to people that have lived in China or live in China. They say, oh, it's not like that.
Yep.
But then I follow people on Twitter who are posting daily incredibly disturbing things in China with regards to control and limiting of movement and stuff. And so... Because obviously, what people are saying is true, it looks like it might be a blueprint for what's coming to here, possibly in a much longer future. Yeah. You obviously think maybe a bit sooner than I do, but yeah. What do you know about China then?
So I researched China for my presentation that I gave here now at BTC Prague, and it was part of my presentation. I had a few slides about it. And so the stage where China is in relation to CBDC is that they launched it a few years ago. They launched, it's called the Digital Yuan, ECNY. That's the official name of the CBDC there. And it was quite unsuccessful. When they launched it, very few people adopted it. Not many digital wallets were open. A lot of people were reporting that there is very low interest from the public. And so what the Chinese government was doing was basically airdropping or bribing the population, giving them free money.
Yeah. Can I just ask one question before we go on?
Yeah.
In that case, what was the difference between Alipay or WeChat or whatever?
I will get to it. 100% I will, right. Because it's related to, I'm getting there for sure. So they tried to bribe the population to give them free money in order to adopt it and start opening the wallets and using CBDC. And it didn't really work well. Now, Alipay and WeChat have the largest market share of digital payments today through payment apps that are integrated almost everywhere. They're more than like north of 85-90% of the market share is both these companies, Alipay and WeChat. And so people didn't really see a need to replace what they're already using and introduce another app called the Digital Yuan and start using that instead. There was no good incentive. There was an incentive, the free money, but it wasn't enough, I guess, to bribe the population. And so people were very, I think, in our community were very too quick to say the Digital Yuan has failed because people did not adopt it. Now, you got to be very smart about it because governments don't give up so quickly. Even if they fail in the first round, they try again in the second round and third round. And they've got a very low time preference, like we say as Bitcoiners, right? They see long term. They're not like us thinking about next year and the budget and what we're going to do. They see 10 years ahead, 20 years ahead. And so, okay, they may have failed the first round. And so what they did recently, I'm talking about a few months ago, they have signed a deal with Alipay and WeChat to integrate the Digital Yuan into their platforms. It's the government. They can do whatever the fuck they want. And especially in China, you know what I mean? They enforce it. They come into the private sector. They go, this is how you do it from now on. And they must do it. You know, it's not like a democratic country. And so they integrated the Digital Yuan into the platforms. It's really early days, so it's hard to tell how it's going to go. But consider that now what they're doing is swapping the infrastructure in the background to be a Digital Yuan instead of a normal fiat yuan. And so for you, the end user, it may be transparent and you'll continue using your Alipay and WeChat and you won't feel the difference. So that's one thing you need to know. The other thing is Chinese people that have been using digital yuan, for example, the public sector, they get their salaries in digital yuan. You know, they can force them. You work for the government or you work for a company that is government, like public government company, you get your salary in digital yuan. Most people, they get it. They convert it on the spot to real yuan, to cash. They don't want to keep it in digital yuan. So, and the last thing is, it was about a week or 2 weeks ago, China is part of a CBDC project called the Enbridge with some other BRICS nations that are part of that project. Thailand is one of them. So, and that project is for cross-border payments. So they're like with CBDCs. So they're testing their abilities to swap money between countries using CBDCs. And that exists for a few years now. However, recently, about 2 weeks ago, China and Thailand have signed an MOU to strengthen their international trade using the digital yuan. And Hong Kong is starting to accept the digital yuan. So there are things that are happening that to me are signals showing me that they're not giving up so quickly on the failed launch of the initial digital yuan. And we just need to be patient and continue watching it and wait and see how it unfolds.
I suppose now might be a good time to talk about why CBDCs in this particular, because China's a good example, why they're bad. And how they integrate with what you would call a social credit score as well.
Right.
Because I think currently those two things are separate, are they? Other than, well, in a
way. In our perception, they're separate.
Yeah. But they actually, I mean, in China, you the social credit score can deduct money from you.
Correct.
Right, okay. So, just before you do that, one question. When you said that it's now integrated with WeChat, does that mean in WeChat you have, you know, 100
yards? I don't know how it looks technologically.
Right, but they are side
by side. It's very interesting.
They are side by side, right. So the CBDC is a distinct thing. Is a distinct number on your?
I don't know. I have to ask that question and see how it's actually technologically implemented in the app. I don't know how it looks like.
Okay.
It would be really interesting to check that, though. Yeah.
So why is it bad? Right.
Why is it bad? Okay.
So, I mean, how long have you got?
So first of all, let's talk about the features of CBDC. So CBDC allows you to set an expiry date on the money. It allows you to set a geographical radius where you can use the money, what's called geofencing in technological terms. And it allows you to set the programming of the money. So what are you going to use the money for? Okay. And it allows you to switch wallets on and off. Those features are built in to the technological abilities, okay? It's not like a if and what, that's like part of CBDC, that's what it does. And that's a lot of power in the hands of the state. So that's the first reason why it's dangerous, just the theoretical ability to do it. Then it's already happening. So for in Thailand, for example, they had a pilot where for 6 months, they gave $280 worth of CBDC, which is 10,000 baht, which is a lot of money for the average Thai. And they went for low income earners as the first group that they're testing it on. The money was valid for 6 months in a radius of 4 kilometers around their house. They justify it by saying, we want to encourage the local community, right? Like free cities, right? We want to encourage the local community and grow the economy, stimulate, exactly. But in fact, what they're doing is setting for you your ability to use your money. They're limiting your human right, which is the right to transact and the right of movement and many other rights that are derived from that limitation. So that's the first thing that is dangerous, just the technological abilities of that system. The second thing is the integration of CBDC system with several other systems. One is the digital ID. Two is the social credits. Three is the carbon credits. And four, I would say, is universal basic income. So any support from the government, allowance, assistance in the form of universal basic income or whatever other title they would give it, would go straight away in digital money. Why not? It's the government is issuing it. They'll issue it like that. They'll make you dependent on them for it. You're lured into the system. Very easy. Let's look at, what's the first thing I said?
Integration with the social credit score, was it? I can't remember.
Digital ID.
Sorry,
okay,
yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
So if you have a digital ID, then if you look at Australia, for example, now with the digital identity bill that have passed, your identity is revealed to the state for almost any action that you take, especially online actions. You surf the internet, you are identified on the internet. They are able to say, to tell which websites you went to, what did you purchase, how much time you spent online, whatever, social media, your opinions, your whatever, you're identified. And so imagine that you're identified and your dissident voice is now known to the government. They can use AI to just really analyze quickly large sums of data and say, all the people that talk about whatever, permaculture. Right now, we want to put them in a segment them into a database, see what they're saying about it, pull out those keywords out of it, and all the people that are looking at permaculture in order to avoid the state control over food. I'm just giving an example off the top of my head.
It's a realistic one.
Let's go after them. They're identified, and then let's give them a quota of their CBDC of how much they can use to buy fertilizers, for example, because they're going to grow their own food, and we don't want them to do that. We want them to buy the industrial food in the supermarket because we don't want to hurt the economy, right? They have reasons for everything. I'm just giving there are so many examples you can make up. So that's the area of digital ID. Then let's look at social credit, right? In China, you talked about it before. I also know, like you, of people that are in China that their freedom of movement is completely limited because they haven't been complying with certain things. They cross the road in a red light, whatever. They have a parking fine. Small things that we think that would never hurt us, our daily lives, they are limited because of that. And so if you have a social credit score, and let's say you make a lot of mistakes or crimes on the road, then they would say that you're not allowed to buy another car, okay, with your CBDC. And again, that's just another example I'm making up, but that's very theoretical. And in China, actually, a lot of these examples are already happening. So I know of people that have their, you know how they have the traffic light system, the red, orange, and green. When you're green on your social credit score, you're fine to do everything. When you're orange, some of the things you're able to do are limited. When you're red, you're fucked. So if you're orange, let's say, you cannot, for example, book a night at the hotel. So if you went to another city and now you need a place to stay, but you're orange, not every hotel will accept you. So I actually know of a person with that system that had to sleep on a bench in the street because they didn't have, in another town in China, they didn't have the right score. And then let's talk about the last thing, which is super important, and that's carbon credits. So people are not really aware of what's happening with carbon credits. But if you follow financial markets, and you can Google that. Just Google carbon market. Carbon is a market today. Financial institutions are trading carbon. There is a price point on carbon. And you now see that with the climate agenda everywhere, right? The farmers' protest is related to that. Agriculture, food is related to that.
Travel.
Government, travel, of course. Governments and global institutions are now telling you, sorry, the world's gonna end, life's gonna end if we don't save Mother Nature and Earth, and therefore we have to start monitoring our carbon footprint. And sorry, we also have to do it to you as an individual, measure your individual carbon footprint. And if you go to the WEF, the World Economic Forum website, and you'll search a personal carbon allowance, you'll find a white paper about that and a research by a few researchers that the WEF is using to justify their actions, where basically they're advocating for a personal carbon allowance for each person based on different parameters. And they're also saying that COVID was the stepping stone or the excuse to justify the humanity accepting that kind of control over our lives. It's out there. You just have to. I have an article about that in my blog. So on my Substack, you can just look and you'll find under articles carbon, personal carbon footprint, an article about that. And there are many examples. MasterCard, for example, has issued a credit card that doesn't just measure your carbon footprint, but also stops you from purchasing stuff if you have reached a certain quota, and they think that helps the environment, right? There are some crazy shit that's happening around that, and it's just a matter of time until it's rolled out to our everyday lives. In New York, for example, the mayor of New York had done a press conference last year, it was, and announced that New York City is going to have to monitor the citizens, the residents' consumption habits from now on, because we are, you know, due to climate change, we need to see how much meat people are eating, how much fashion they're consuming, because that also hurts the environment, how much building infrastructure there is, how much travel they're doing. And there's a dashboard on the New York City website, if you go there and you'll check, that is measuring carbon emissions for each one of these categories. And he said that they signed a partnership with American Express in order to limit the consumption habits of New York residents. So these things are already happening. The next logical step is tying that into CBDC, because once you can quantify people's actions and daily habits, and you have on the other side a tool that can limit their freedoms and set, just like we said, programming. You program with the CBDC what you can use your money and what you can't, and where and when. Then you put those two things together, you get the ultimate control apparatus.
I mean, for me as well, I think the most disturbing thing about it is, if you look back historically, you know, man's already always tried to control his or her fellow man, woman, right? Mm-hmm. But with the current state of technology, you really can scale that stuff. I mean, this, yeah, what you're describing here is infinitely scalable with very, with very little human input when you think about it, especially the social credit score system, because, you know, when you look at, say, a very authoritarian government, they often collapse under the weight of their size in the end. There's just not enough people to enforce the rules and regulations for them. But with social credit, it's an algorithm which is actually enforcing the law. You can almost do away with the legal system completely, because all you have to do is keep getting that score up.
Yep.
And it's just...
It's a code written. It's an algorithm.
Exactly. But at the center of it is basically obedience.
That's right.
It's a score of obedience.
Yes, that's right. And it's implicit obedience, because it's enough that you already know that that's the rule. You don't want to get there. So you'll be compliant just not to get there, to prevent that situation. Now, it's very important for me to say that I don't want your audience to now be sitting at home chopping their fingernails because it's so scary. As I said at the beginning, we don't know where it's going to go. So it's not necessarily that all the examples or use cases I gave are going to manifest and happen. But I think we just have to be aware of the possibility, the theoretical possibility that they will implement all that shit in order to resist it on time and create more awareness with the public of where it can go. And what I'm advocating for, and this is what I did in my presentation here at BTC Prague, is saying, we've got Bitcoin, right? It is not controllable. It is not permission. It's permissionless, right? We don't need to ask for permission. They cannot program our money to do anything with it if we use Bitcoin. Let's leave alone all the other traits and benefits of Bitcoin. But if we just focus on liberty and freedom at the moment, then that money enables, like Knut is saying, it's fuck you money, right? And with fuck you money, we should be able to also say fuck you. So if we just appreciate and acknowledge the fact that another type of money exists that frees us a little bit from the control of the state, and we take action in our lives to move some of our wealth, even if not all of it, to that parallel system, then we actually create that parallel path in our lives, the parallel reality. I'm not saying we will be 100% in Bitcoin, because it's really hard to still live on a Bitcoin standard. We're really early days, but have one foot in the fiat world and CBDC world and one foot in your Bitcoin world, and be able to maneuver between them whenever you need to. Be smart about it. Take care of your own property and your own wealth by having an option to be outside of that system. Even if they tax you on your Bitcoin, you still have Bitcoin, and with its properties, all they can do is tax it, right? They can't do much more. And by the way, Eric Stacks, I don't know if you know him, he reckons that all this CBDC apparatus is there in order to continue exuding tax from people and not really to control them. Like, he thinks the state and the government is not really interested in control so much. They're really interested in continuing stealing our productivity away from us and taking the tax away from us. So, and maybe he's right. I'm just holding his view as well, right? I've got my view. This is his view. Legit. Maybe all they want to do is really just continue to tax us, and this is a more efficient way of taxing us.
Well, who knows? I would argue tax is control.
It is a form of control, yeah.
I mean, I just have to look at my own life to see that I stopped working beyond a certain point because I was thinking, I'm not going to give you 40% of my money. So there's a ceiling on my productivity, and it does work. And that's just me. And I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, you think of all the other ways that they... I think the worst part about tax, when you think about it, is say I think the average person in the UK pays about £5,000 a year in tax or something. If you invested that £5,000, it's not very long. It's 20 years, you know, compound interest. You've got like... a lot of money that you could be spending on yourself, you know, like, and this is for a relatively small amount of tax, you know, but yeah, it does actually limit everyone because it stops you thinking, stops the productivity, and almost certainly you would be better at spending that money yourself. Almost certainly a private company would be better at spending it. Mm-hmm. You know, the incentives for the government to spend it wisely, as you know, are completely corrupt and back to front and upside down.
Well, they're not. We know that they're not really spending it. They're just trying to cover the deficit that they have, which they will never succeed because we're in a fiat world that the debt just keeps growing and growing. It's a black hole.
It's interesting, though, because 5 years ago, that wasn't well understood.
What?
The fact that tax doesn't necessarily pay for all the things that you think it does.
It's an illusion.
Right, I know, but it was only 5 years ago, no one even spoke about it. Uh-huh. And now, like, what was it this year? Bukele is literally giving a speech to, who was it? Somebody.
It was in a CPAC conference.
Right, and
in
he's
the US.
It's basically, if they can print as much money as they want, why do
we need taxes?
Right. But that's an interesting step.
And he said it's an illusion to have you thinking that the money you give to the government is then used to build and invest in what you do in what you have as a citizen in your country. And that's an illusion of democracy. That's not the way it works.
Well, I would say that's a good signal. Mm-hmm. Because I meet people regularly in my family, for example, who now... understand a little bit more about inflation, mm-hmm. about tax,
good.
About all these things. And that was, I mean, even me,
great.
10 years ago, I had no idea about any of this stuff.
Me neither.
Right. So people are talking about it. I mean, let's be positive.
My background is not in finance.
Me neither.
I started learning about money because of COVID, because they took my rights in COVID. I knew that they would take my rights over my property and my money next. So I have to get educated about it. And that's what I recommend everyone to do.
Yeah, it was Bitcoin.
Because that's the next battle.
Bitcoin was the thing that made me look at finance. It's funny, there was all I had a strong reaction against anything economics, finance, whatever.
Yeah,
it was
same.
Always like, oh my God, how boring. And then when you actually get into it, it's phenomenally interesting.
It's fascinating because money is so much more than just money. It's a tool for cooperation, for collaboration, for partnership, for communication. It's an amazing tool. We just, you see how they made it dirty for us on purpose. Mm,
I would imagine so.
So that we would be disgusted by it and not want to touch it. They want to keep us ignorant about money. They want to be the only ones understanding it. That goes back exactly to what you said about Augustin Chrestien's. He doesn't think that people understand money, and he's right. Most people don't understand money. And he's disregarding our intelligence to be able to understand it. And when you start learning about the fiat system, you understand that it's not that complicated. It's just very, very corrupt.
Funnily enough as well, recently there are a few videos have come out that show that even the central bankers don't really understand money.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, that's shocking.
Because there are paradoxes built in the innate nature of fiat. Fiat does not make sense. It's not logical. It's a beast.
It's a scam.
It's a scam. It's a Ponzi scam. So how can they explain it in a logical way? They always like bump into that ceiling. They try.
Call it what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, people might even appreciate that. It's like, hey, look, we can print the money. You've got to earn it. That's the way it is. Yeah. I bet half the population would probably go, okay.
Okay. Like the oxygen we breathe, like the water we have in our tap, we take it for granted.
Yeah.
No. Ask the question, what is money and how is it created? Maybe I can just recommend a movie for people to watch if they want to start. It's called The Four Horsemen on YouTube. It's really, really good to give you the basics about how money works. It's about a 12-year-old documentary with like 10 million views. It's great, great.
That's
documentary.
Interesting. I've never heard
1 hour.
That. Who made that?
I don't remember the guy that made it. I think I contacted him, but I now don't remember his name. But one of the people that is in that movie is Max Kaiser, which I highly appreciate. That's where I saw him first and I started following him. He came from Wall Street and he explained things really well. And there are a lot of professors there and economists and finance people. It's a great movie.
Why Four Horsemen?
Because they talk about the, I think it's the apocalypse of Four Horsemen.
Horsemen of the Apocalypse, right.
Yes,
right, okay.
The famine and war and da da da. So,
right, okay.
Yeah, I don't remember the details, but.
Going back to CBDCs and Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Last night I was doing a bit of research on Twitter and I typed CBDC in. And a couple of my old tweets came out, you know, like they do. And I was like, oh, yeah. And it was interesting because about 3 years ago or something. You know that meme? It's a spaceman saying something and behind him there's another spaceman about to shoot him.
Okay.
Do you know this one?
No.
Oh, you must see that.
You'll show me that.
And the meme is like, it always has been. Like, and it's basically someone just like about to assassinate you because you know too much kind of thing. Anyway, I'd done that one and it was like, the one spaceman saying, it's Bitcoin versus CBDCs. And the guy behind's going, it always has been.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, and I remember having that thought a while ago, thinking, this is the point of it all. Because Satoshi or whatever, whoever the cypherpunks, they all knew this kind of reckoning day would come.
Yes.
And you can forget every other aspect of Bitcoin. You don't have to worry about that.
Yep.
You do need a resistance money. You need a freedom money.
Mm-hmm.
You need all these things because the alternative is predictable.
Yes.
And they saw it all. Yep. They're technologists because it's a function of technology, a CBDC.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea has been around for years. Like I say, people have always wanted to control people.
Mm-hmm.
Normally it's the physical violence or the strength that does it.
We have technology.
Right. So what do you think about that? Do you think that's the core purpose of Bitcoin?
Look, what is Satoshi write on the white paper? Peer-to-peer electronic cash, right? So I think his long-term vision was that, or is that. I think it still is that. I don't think we're ready to use Bitcoin as a medium of exchange yet. I think we're far from it. We see beginnings in some communities around the world, in some cities, especially in third world countries. I think it's great. It's like the pilots of the CBDC, right? That's how I see it. But right now we're discovering that Bitcoin is amazing as a store of value and it can really protect what's ours. It can protect our wealth and our property. And so I think that Bitcoin was created in order to give us the safety and the protection that we need from the state. Whether it be used as a medium of exchange or a store of value, you know, we need time for that. But right now, it's clear that mechanism that was created, that genius, you know, discovery, is there to protect us, the people, from the state.
And arguably, as time progresses, if CBDCs do start becoming implemented and people start realizing, well, hell, I can't spend my money in the shop I want to spend it in,
mm-hmm.
they will naturally look for an alternative. And at that point, they may discover this is the alternative.
Exactly. And it's important for me to say something about that because I know probably a big chunk of your audience are freedom fighters that are looking for alternative ways to live their lives with as less friction with the institution as possible. And minimize their connection with the establishment as much as they can. There is a common I would say, mistake or misperception in that for that audience that is looking, actively looking for ways out. One of them is cash, 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 right? We need to adopt cash. We need to convey that cash is the safest thing. We need to do all those cash days and get people to take cash out of the ATM and use it as much as we can. And that's good because it's a signal to the state and the bankers, we want privacy. We're not going to let go of our rights so quickly. However, the bad thing about it is that people don't go the extra mile to understand what cash is. Cash is fiat. What does it mean? When you think that your ultimate solution is cash and you stop your learning curve there and you don't continue, what are you doing? You are continuing to strengthen the fiat beast. Fiat is a system that lives on your trust and it lives on continuous inflation of the supply of money. And cash is not your ultimate solution. It is a solution for privacy. It is a short-term solution for what's happening right now because it gives a signal to the state. However, it cannot be the end solution. It cannot be a long-term solution because cash will allow you to use it and live with it for as long as the state will decide that it is valid or in the quantities that the state will decide, because at one stage they will become more aggressive and more violent about how they enforce their cash laws. We're seeing the trend of going cashless and minimizing cash and closing ATMs, closing banks. You know, it's happening all around the world, especially in Western countries. And so that is inevitable that that will happen because that's the trend. That's where the state is taking it. And so at one point, they'll start arresting people for having too much cash in the house, for trading cash under more than a certain quota. And so you have to be smarter than them and stop thinking just about cash as your end solution and continue developing your learning process of what is cash, what is fiat, and how can I beat the government or the state in my educational journey and understand that fiat is still limiting me and I need something else, which is Bitcoin. Okay, Bitcoin cannot, its supply cannot be inflated. We cannot create as much as we want from it and we don't need permission for it. And so I encourage everyone to stop just yelling cash is the solution because it's a short-term solution and not a long-term one, and start learning Bitcoin. The other thing about it, cash was the barter. You know, we'll build communities and we'll barter with each other. What's the problem? I'm growing lettuce, you're growing chickens, we'll have a happy community and we'll live happily ever after. Money was created in the first place because barter has an innate problem, and that's the coincidence of wants, right? The barter system has a limitation which says you have lettuce, I have chickens. It's hard to trade one for one in a way, you know, I don't need a chicken right now, but you really want to give me your lettuce. But sorry, I don't need your lettuce right now, but you really, so there's a problem there. And how do we quantify? It doesn't have the same unit of account. It doesn't have the same measurement system because you're using lettuce and I'm using chickens or eggs, whatever. So it's hard to do this work. So I encourage everyone to go and learn what is the coincidence of wants. And then money, real money, solves that problem because it's an intermediary medium between you and what you've got to trade and the other person and what they've got to trade. And so barter will take you that far as well. It will not take you all the way because you will still face the coincidence of wants problem. And so cash is not the end result. Barter is not the end result. You need a medium of exchange, which is money. And again, go learn Bitcoin, you know, so it solves that one too.
So the thing about cash as well is it's definitely getting phased out.
It's phased
out. You can see it around you. I had an experience the other day back home in the UK. I was dropping my daughter off at a sports centre and there was a cafe there. And I was buying a coffee for me and my friend and the girl behind the counter said, oh, you know, we don't accept cash. And I said, don't worry, love, I'm not going to be that guy. She said, good, because I've had two today already.
Oh, really?
So there's people going,
yeah, good.
But the way they come at it is they go, it's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
you have to accept my money and blah, 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 you know, which is obviously playing into the whole game.
Exactly.
I mean, I thought about giving it a Bitcoin
because they're continuing to push cash. They're continuing to push fiat. And they're trying to educate the business owners that fiat is good and fiat is not good. We want the business owners to understand that they can do Bitcoin as well.
But it is also the fact that the instant thought was to, from the customer, was to revert to complaining to the state. Come on, the state says it's the law. You have to accept my cash. And I wasn't even thinking, my thought process is what was, well, I could try orange pill someone here.
Exactly.
But it was the wrong time. 52-year-old guy, sort of like 21-year-old girl. It's not going to happen.
Sure.
But you can see everywhere you go now, not accepting cash. Exactly. Cash machines disappearing. I have to travel 35 miles if I want to get cash now from where I live.
Unbelievable.
You know, so it's gone. And you have to, if you can have cash, great. But you have to think in terms of everything's going digital.
Exactly.
And when it's all digital, you're going to need two choices in the marketplace of money, at least. And one of them better be out of the hands of the state. Otherwise, you're going to have to be obedient if you want to spend it, basically.
Right. And there's some really cool innovation coming out from the Bitcoin space about privacy. For example, I've seen Fedi. It's a startup that what it does is it creates communities and it allows you to define a certain community and let your people in your community join that community. It's called a fediment, like a federation that you have. And inside your federation, you are able to trade and swap money, which is on top of, it's using eCash in the background, which is using Bitcoin. And you guys can trade between yourselves on the fediment, and it will not be written on the blockchain because it's using eCash. So it's completely private. People cannot see the transactions that are happening
the mint
there.
The federation would presumably be able to see what you're doing, or whoever's running the federation.
No. It's completely private. That's the whole value proposition of this startup. It's a new startup. I'm not an expert, so I cannot speak on their behalf.
I thought it was
behalf,
like running your own node.
Completely different. And Jeff Booth and Egodeth are investing in that startup, and I think they're going to do really, really interesting things. I saw them at the booth now at BTC Prague, and they helped me join like a federation, and we did some transactions. So I saw how it works. You can actually have a chat with someone, private chat on your fediment, on your federation. And then, you know, you tell me, I've got lettuce. Okay, I've got chickens. Let's swap money in the DM, in the private message. No one sees our transaction. That's really fucking cool. And that's on top of Bitcoin.
I've seen a few applications of Noster that are kind of similar. Mm-hmm. I think that's where it's all going. I mean, the big change you can see, other than, you know, we're talking about the difference between Bitcoin and CBDC, is the centralized version and the decentralized version. Mm-hmm. And the decentralized tools, which are inevitably open source, which perfect, the centralized tools being closed source, it's an obvious battle.
Of course.
Happening. What are you? Have you got any particular opinions on other aspects of your life where you might be able to position yourself best for a potential future that might be coming, like a CBDC future? Not necessarily just, you know, Bitcoin. Financial. What about other practical things?
Yeah, I think that it's very smart of people today to work on additional nationalities or passports, right? Get a second passport. I've got dual nationality, Israeli and Australian. They're both crap, but I do. But at least I can use
out the fire into the frying pan.
Exactly. Which one do you want, a bad or a worse? So
two wrongs don't make a right.
But at least I've got two. So if one doesn't work, I can try the other. Anyway, it helps with some things. And so I think a dual nationality is something that is very smart to have these days.
And is that because, I mean, even like you say, they may well be bad nationalities, but it does allow you, does it allow you to be a foreigner in your own country? So, like if you go to Australia, can you do it on account of your other passport?
I don't think so.
Because a huge advantage,
that's
isn't
right.
it?
No, but they know. No, you have to be. Okay. They know your both your identities.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because in Israel, for example, there's a law that when you leave or enter the country, you have to do it with your Israeli passport, but you have to also show if you have another passport. Right. So they know that you have dual citizenship. I wouldn't count on that. However, it gives you the freedom to enter certain countries that you couldn't with one passport. You can do it with another. If one expires, you have the other. There are certain, you know, allowances for certain countries. In other countries, like Australia has got the Commonwealth countries, Sri Lanka, New Zealand, UK, that I can get like better conditions in if I need to escape for some reason. So that's one thing, a dual nationality at least. The other thing would be finding your clan, finding your tribe, your community, right? The people you trust and building a group with them, whether it's small or big, at least have a group of people that you can trust, that you know that, you know, the shit hits the fan, you can rely on them, trust them. You may sit together and just have a plan B for a bad day. What are you going to do if this happens in the country? Like in Israel, we've got war, right? Or what happens if there's a big climate event, or if there's another lockdown for any stupid reason or whatever? And how are we going to communicate with each other? How are we going to rely on each other? So that really helps to have a support group. And many people don't have that, I find. And I find that quite, not sad, but quite, it's a shame, because once you have that, not only you have the support when you need it, but mentally, spiritually also, you feel safer, you feel better, you're less worried about your day to day, because you know someone's got your back, you know. There, you become friends, you visit each other, you update each other on what's happening. They're like-minded like you, you know, and you don't need to explain all your shenanigans and the stuff you believe or the knowledge that you acquire or gain that most people don't have. So that is super important, to have your support group. So nationality, support group, Bitcoin. What else? I always advise people to work on their mental and spiritual capacity, because if you limit yourself to knowledge only, intellectually, which I love, you know, that's what I do. I'm a journalist. I research, I write, I do videos, media, whatever. And I don't underestimate that. That's super important, to gain knowledge and to learn and to intellectually make yourself more improved and better. That's super critical. However, if you just do that, and you're relying on yourself getting by and advancing just thanks to the intellectual abilities and the knowledge that you have, you're fucked. Sorry, you're fucked. Because if you don't have the mental stability and the spiritual faith and trust that you'll be fine, that you're safe, that you're loved, that you are free and peaceful from within to hold whatever disaster is coming next, because the next few years are not going to be easy for anyone, no matter where you are. In some places it will be easier than others, but we are facing a really turbulent decade right now. And I think we're right in the middle of it, or maybe at the beginning middle of it, right? So I think we're going to see a lot more shit that's hitting the fan. And I think that if you don't become resilient and more spiritual and more mentally prepared for what's coming, you're going to face a very difficult time. And I do see that happening with a lot of the freedom movement that is mostly based on knowledge and intellectual, right? They acquire a lot of information. Some of it, I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone, is like from white hat Telegram groups, and they don't bother to go to the process of validating the information or seeking proofs. They just rely on someone else giving them the opposite opinion or information, and that's not good. You want to try not to fall into traps. Some of it is psyop. So they're trying to make you believe that you'll be fine just by believing that some white hat is going to save you or something. No one's coming to save us. We have to rely on ourselves. And why am I saying this is a psyop? I'll give one example and then we can move on. You know, XRP, Ripple, for example. That
very
is
very well.
perfect example for a PSYOP. Why? A lot of the awake movement, awake people, the freedom movement. They think that XRP is the hottest thing since sliced bread. Why? Because, because some theory on Telegram is telling them that XRP is the money of tomorrow thanks to what's called a QFS, a quantum financial system. And the QFS, which is under ISO 2001, whatever, and is implemented by this or by that, is Nasara Jasara, and all these slogans and great stuff that people are promising them that will happen, that will save their lives. XRP is going to be printed in abundance. Everyone could have it. Everyone that buy XRP now will see the results in the future. And what they don't know is that XRP, first of all, it's centralized. Secondly, they can print as much as they want, just like fiat. Thirdly, XRP, Ripple, is the chosen platform for CBDC around the world. So they work today, they already work with 6 central banks and governments to provide them with their CBDC platform. And they're positioning themselves in the industry to be the chosen solution for CBDC.
They also
and stable coins.
They've also actively been combative towards Bitcoin. I mean, look at the Greenpeace USA thing. That's funded by
Ripple. They say that their claim for fame is that they're fast and they consume very little energy, so they're green. They go with the green agenda as opposed to Bitcoin. Whatever. It's a scam. And so people need to not just rely on information that they seek out there, but really go and validate it. And don't buy all the lies that people
That was one of the disappointing things I discovered, actually. During the pandemic, we went to Mexico, my whole family. Mm-hmm. And we started tapping into those communities in Mexico, because there was a lot of people in Mexico who went there because there were no restrictions. Mm-hmm. And Telegram groups and this, that, and the other. And I was surprised. I thought I was going to meet a lot of Bitcoiners, and I hardly met any. Uh-huh. It was rife with shitcoining, basically.
Yes.
And the misunderstandings that I heard from day one were incredible. And but they had a different mindset as well. They were, and this is going back to what you said about spiritual robustness and how important it is, because I agree. And I think your networks of trust and spiritual robustness are intricately connected.
Yeah.
Right? But they're also intricately connected.
Very connected, yes.
And one thing you see about Bitcoiners is you see that. Right. Great networks of trust. You know, and I would say to anyone, look, if you're wondering what we're talking about here, just come and step in the world of, into the world of Bitcoin. You'll find phenomenal camaraderie, you'll find hope, you'll find spiritual robustness, you'll find a lot of other shit as well, but if you're looking for the good stuff, it's all here.
Yeah.
And it is an important part of it that most people, like you say, don't necessarily rate so much. And for me, for example, the networks of trust, the only ones I care about are my Bitcoiner friends, mm-hmm. or my pre-cities friends, mm-hmm. who kind of cross over, and my local community, and whoever in that local community. If there's a crossover there, wonderful. even better. But if there's not, it doesn't actually matter. Mm-hmm. You know, I live in a farm, mm-hmm. so we've got high on our list is food. Do we know people that have got food? Do we know people who can make food? Do we know, you know? But it's not easy to just sit in your, I don't know, in your flat in Prague and dream about what do I want? How do I get myself into a situation where I'm hedging well for the future, let's mm-hmm, say? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I would say, don't live in a city. Mm-hmm. That would be a pretty bad idea, I think, living in a city. Because if you're talking about, going back to CBDCs, if you're talking about obedience, mm-hmm.
It will be enforced in the city, yes. more than anywhere else.
It's almost unenforceable. I mean, there's a level to which it is unenforceable. Mm-hmm. And that means getting as far away from centers of conurbation as you can.
Agreed.
Now, like I say, it all sounds a bit like, people might listen and go, oh my God, what is it? These doomsayers, world's going to end, get out of the cities and stuff. But I do think about these things, and I think it's a plan that you should be thinking about. Because just predict about 5 steps in advance, mm-hmm. learn about the technology, learn about money, learn about what the state is and why it is what it is, mm-hmm. learn about self-sovereignty, and then look at your life and say to yourself, okay, can I improve any aspects of that in my life? Even only 1%, 2%, 3%. It's a journey. And I'm like 10 years in and I've only just ended up on a farm.
You nailed it. It's a process. And you take it step by step, whatever you can. But go into that process. Start it.
I think Bitcoin's a good starting point.
It definitely is. And I want people to understand that the starting point of Bitcoin is not really, I think, not really Bitcoin. It's money. Understand money. And that's why you're talking about that pitfall of so many people going into crypto, because they don't get the distinction between crypto and Bitcoin, because they don't learn about money and they don't understand what is a supply of money, what is a finite supply, what is inflation, what is all those terms are key to understand what Bitcoin is. If you don't understand them, if you don't understand how money is being created, then you cannot understand the difference between crypto and Bitcoin. If you don't understand centralized powers versus decentralization, if you don't understand permission versus permissionless programming of money, etc., then you cannot understand how it works. And so in order to understand Bitcoin, you really have to understand money. So go back and start with that. And then the whole shitcoin space, the whole alternative coins space will look very different to you. And then you'll make your decisions. You may choose to keep some of them, fair enough, for different reasons. That's fine. And you may choose to just go Bitcoin only.
Or more likely, you will choose to change a number of different things about your life.
100%.
And like I say, Bitcoin is a doorway into much, much more than just what is money.
Exactly. And for me, it also was a process, although I'm a quick learner. And when I got into it, I did everything quite fast. But it did take me a while from the moment that I started getting into it until when I sold my apartment and put the money into Bitcoin. It took me about, thank you. I did that recently. Actually, today I'm supposed to get the last installment of the money of the apartment.
Are you a full-on digital nomad then now, would you say?
No. I am based in Israel and I do have a flat that I'm renting, and I'm renting it out via Airbnb wherever I travel overseas, but...
Wow, you made the attack. You made the full sailor move.
Exactly. But I did take most of my wealth and put that into Bitcoin, because I also said, I'm not against real estate, by the way. I think that real estate is great because it's a place to live if you know where you want to live and what's the right community for you. And so what I said is, until I find my right place, whether it's in Israel or elsewhere, and it's probably elsewhere, I'm parking that money somewhere, right? The worst place I can park that money is in the bank. Yes. Because that's fiat, because that they're going to do many things to that and I cannot take it out. And so I already planned to park that in Bitcoin. And if I want to take it out for real estate, I will, whenever the time's right.
There will be a number of people that say, that's a crazy move as well, parking it in Bitcoin.
I know, many people tell me that.
Exactly, but I my answer to that hasn't wavered for quite a long time. And that is that from my own studies, a very intense 10,000 hours of study of all this stuff, it's still the best option that I've found.
It's the best asset.
And if it doesn't work... Mm-hmm. I don't care, because show me what I should be doing, and I will do that. Mm-hmm. But I've centered on that same experience. And if the ship goes down, cool. I'm going down with all my mates.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not worried at all. I actually sleep way better at night since I did that.
Interesting.
Yep. I love that.
Well, look, I think that's a good time to end. That's a good positive note, at least for like 80% of the listeners, I suppose.
But, the orange ones.
Yes. Thanks very much for coming in. It's been really enlightening. I love your style of talking as well. It's very authoritative. I appreciate it. I hope it's all true.
Authoritative. It's you mean confident?
Like, yes.
Look, I do my research. I won't talk about things I don't know. I won't be presumptuous.
But it is what you... I mean, and just to carry the conversation on a little bit, what you're talking about is very easy to put aside. It's mm-hmm. like conspiracy.
That's right.
This, you have to be very careful
right.
how you describe this stuff to people
correct.
Because the way to poo-poo it is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. Conspiracy. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? The world's not about to end. The system's not about to collapse. You know, trust the government, blah, 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 blah. And we're all fine thinking all these thoughts. But when you start reaching out to the common person, it's not easy. And you need to either be very good at stats and, or, you know, and what you're saying, make sure you get it all 100%. Or, yeah, you've got to say it in a way that people can consume. And you do it well. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And people can find resources on my blog and my Twitter. If on Twitter you just do hashtag CBDC and my username, you'll find a lot of threads that you can use with a lot of, I give receipts. So you'll have videos there of actual central bankers talking and saying things. You'll have articles on my blog that you can use about CBDC, again, with links to the actual original sources. So you'll be able to show receipts for everything that you're saying about it. And people are, that you can DM me with questions if you have a specific question I can try and answer.
All in the show notes, of course. Thanks once again, Efrat, for joining, for
thanks
coming
for
here. It's been
me.
Awesome. I've enjoyed this. Thanks.
Me too. Thanks.